Last year, we got about half of our predictions right.
Interest rates are lower today than they were a year ago, and they're more stable, but they're not necessarily low.
I think it's less about where prices are going because none of us really know. We have a prediction, but none of us really know.
I am not calling it the pre-sale market anymore.
We currently have more completed and unsold condos in Metro Vancouver than we've had since the Great Recession.
Total population, we expect across Metro Vancouver a 10,000 person decrease.
Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, Vice President of Intelligence and Head Economist at Rennie.
And I'm Ryan Wise, Market Intelligence Manager and Lead Analyst at Rennie.
And you're going on holiday in T-minus, what, like 12 hours? No, 24 hours?
20 hours, yeah. I'm
20?
Checked in when on do you the leave? Flight already, tomorrow morning.
Like how early?
Flight's like 9 something, not too early.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Cabo. It's going to be great.
Amazing. Awesome.
Sunshine.
I might join you. Would you mind?
Come on down.
Yeah. Awesome. Before you go, we are going to record this episode of the podcast, which is centered around the Rennie Outlook, which is an annual report that we publish here at Rennie that contains a slew of predictions for our economy and our housing market here in Metro Vancouver. So, and you can get the report at Rennie.com/intelligence. It's published. Last year, we got about half of our predictions right. And I've been saying, you know, we got half of them right. If we were a baseball player, you know, we'd be on track to win the batting crown. If we were landing airplanes, this would be a disaster. We know that at the end of the day, forecasting is a tough gig, right? And forecasters are going to get things wrong. Hopefully not more often than not. But at the end of the day, if we know we can't always be right, then why do we forecast?
You mean besides just putting ourselves out there and putting a stake in the ground and saying a number?
Because I love putting ourselves out there.
That's fun. But more importantly, I think it's all about our rationale for why we think something's going to happen. Our analysis, our thought process, the context for what we think is going to happen in the year ahead. So you can agree with us, you can disagree, but we can talk through all the drivers affecting our market and why we think the year ahead is going to unfold the way we do.
So last year we published our 2025 edition of the Outlook on January 31st.
Not great timing.
It turned out not to be. Just the next day, the US announced that they'd be imposing massive tariffs on Canadian imports. So on a scale of we nailed it to we need a new crystal ball, how'd we do?
Well, like you said, we're about half right. So a little bit of both. Some we nailed and some we need a new crystal ball for. But we can, but for anything we didn't get right, we just go ahead and blame it all on one person, right?
I think we do that.
Yeah, we'll do that. So this year we probably don't have that. Like, you know, trade uncertainty is baked in. Consumer sentiment is what it is. I think a lot of people are expecting maybe some more controversy with we have to renegotiate our free trade agreement, CUSMA, this year. So there is that uncertainty already. So we kind of go into this year eyes wide open.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting tired of using the word uncertainty.
Yeah.
I think people are tired of hearing about it. And I mean, the source of uncertainty. So the constant is uncertainty. Mm-hmm. The source of it has been evolving, like literally over the past 5 years. Last year, we didn't know what could happen. We didn't know what the U.S. could or would do, you know, whether it was as it relates to the tariffs legal or not, remains up for debate, chiefly amongst the Supreme Court justices in the US who have not rendered their decision, but we're waiting for it. Either way, merely announcing that tariffs are going to be slapped on a country's exports can throw that country into a tizzy. So, I mean, to your point, this year it feels like we're almost like prepared for a certain degree of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten used to a base level of chaos.
Yeah, base level of chaos. So awesome. Let's talk about the forecasts for 2026, because I think that's what people care most about. And let's start on the sales front.
Sure.
So we are forecasting 38,000 MLS sales in the Vancouver region in 2026. So the Vancouver region runs from Pemberton down Sea to Sky all the way across what most people know as Metro Vancouver, out to and including Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. So it's a big region, over 3 million residents. We're forecasting 38,000 sales. That's an 8% increase.
Yay.
Over last year. However, last year was at least a 20-year low.
Yeah.
So why, I've seen a bunch of numbers out there too. Ours is not tremendously aggressive. Why aren't we being, you know, more optimistic on that front?
Yeah, I think a few things right away, like, again, consumer confidence hasn't really improved. Consumers are a bit shy right now about making major purchases because they're concerned about the economy. They're concerned about the labor market. We're not seeing huge numbers of layoffs across the economy, but I think a lot of workers are not feeling as confident in their job security as they used to. There's a lot of survey data kind of supporting that. So I think people are apprehensive about making a big purchase. Interest rates are lower today than they were a year ago, and they're more stable, but they're not necessarily low relative to the last 20 years. And so affordability has improved, but people aren't necessarily jumping back in. We're a month into the year, and so far we haven't seen a big pickup in sales activity yet. And I think buyers are pretty cautious out there right now.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. There's not a lot of urgency, right? And I think that's especially true when interest rates are unambiguously falling, which they're not. So it'd be interesting to see how, I mean, both the Bank of Canada, we're going to give this one away, aren't we? Or I'm going to.
Spoilers.
Spoiler alert here. The Bank of Canada is unlikely to lower its overnight rate, its policy, its trend setting rate in 2026. And mortgage rates have, it feels like, bottomed out.
And ticked up a little bit. And we'll kind of see as they, as we go.
That actually might, in a roundabout way, provide a little bit of fuel for the market. Because, you know, for those would-be buyers who are kind of waiting to see how the market would evolve, is they're looking at prices, they're looking at inventory, they're looking at interest rates. You know, if interest rates have stabilized, there isn't, at least as far as they're concerned, those rates are concerned, there isn't a reason there to wait longer. So then it just really becomes a matter of, I think it's less about where prices are going, because none of us really know. We have a prediction, but none of us really know. But there's a lot of choice out there. So it's kind of like, hey, is the home that I want, that I can afford, out there? And I think we'll start seeing at the margin more people make that move.
Yeah.
Okay, what about the pre-sale market? I don't know. Do we call it the pre-sale market anymore?
We're not calling I am not calling it the pre-sale market anymore. So my big thing for 2026 is I'm calling it the new home market. So if you hear me call it pre-sale, you can
unless you mean true pre-sale. Like why the shift in the language?
Pre-sale for so long in this market really dominated the new home space. Developers brought a project to market. Most of the buying happened before construction started. Buyers would put a deposit down for a home to be delivered later. So last year, about a third of all transactions were true pre-sale. Another third were of homes already under construction. And then another third was completed new homes ready to hand the keys over. And so that record low sales activity of actually just under 6,000 new home sales, now that we have the Q4 data, lowest in our data provider's data set going back to 2012, probably the lowest since at least 2008. We don't know if 2008 was lower. But this year, we don't expect many new project launches. Again, there's a lot of inventory in the new home segment, just like the resale segment. There's not a ton of optimism about the segment of the market picking back up all that quickly. And so I think most of the transactions will be absorbing existing inventory. So some of that is completed inventory, some of that's under construction inventory. And then at the margin, a few launches of, you know, some smaller scale wood frame and townhome projects. But overall, I think the meat of the market will be not true pre-sale this year.
I also think, you know, part of that is just the lack of investor participation. So, you know, the new home market is being driven by end users right now. I would say arguably the entire market is really end user driven right now.
Yes.
If you're an end user, you don't necessarily need a home in 4 years. You might need a home in a year from now. So, you know, back to your point there, for those buildings that are under construction and completing soon or already completed, I think is a good bet for where we'll see a lot of that demand manifest.
Yeah, and it's even really challenging for any end user buyer that's move up or downsizer. Like, most of your equity or down payment is in your existing home. So it's often really challenging for a buyer with a lot of equity in a home. They need to sell that home in order to fund the next purchase to wait 4 years. They have to put a deposit down and source those funds from somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right. So let's keep going on this topic. We are also forecasting that segment of the market, the completed and unsold segment of the new home market. Yeah, not something that we forecasted last year. And and honestly, it wasn't even really part of the, you talk to industry people, and prior to 2025, completed and unsold inventory was like, I don't know, it was a feature of the market, but it wasn't a determinant of, you know, total supply. It didn't influence prices. It didn't show up on the radar of, you know, those parties that were bringing new projects to market mm-hmm. that were looking to launch. But now it's very much a part of the, like, woven into the landscape. We currently have more completed and unsold condos mm-hmm. in Metro Vancouver than we've had since the Great Recession.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. And so what are you seeing?
So over the last year, it increased by about half. So we started tracking this in earnest at the end of 2024. And it really picked up. It was more than 2,000 completed unsold condos in the market. And so we started paying a lot more attention to it as it became more prominent. Grew by about half. So now it's just under 3,500 or mm-hmm. as of the end of the year. So we expect this to continue to grow, not as quickly this year. So we're not expecting sales to necessarily increase all that much this year. Our forecast for new home sales is a marginal increase. But there's fewer unsold homes completing this year. So there's actually still quite a few completions coming in 2026. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of condo inventory under construction, but the wave of completions that we expect to finish this year is actually sold pretty well, sold a few years ago when the market was more active. And so of the 54 projects we think are going to complete this year, they're on average about 80% sold. There'll be some absorption at those projects. And so the number of homes essentially completing and hitting the market will be slightly higher than what we figure will be drawn down. Yeah. And so, you know, we think we're going to get up like 3,600 and change by the end of this year.
So not a big shift there. I guess one of the factors that comes into play that we haven't explicitly accounted for is, do all those buyers that purchased a few years ago close? Do they complete on their deals?
So anecdotally, we're hearing that not all buyers are closing right now. And part of the reason, of course, is that prices have come down and appraisals are coming in a bit lower than mm-hmm. people paid. So you have to come up with more money to fund the purchase. And that's challenging for some buyers.
Yeah. Again, on the supply side, I think we had a record number of housing completions across the region, just over 30,000.
Yes. So 30,000 for the first time.
For the first time ever. Yeah. For what that's worth. We've crossed some arbitrary threshold. That sounds like a big number. And I mean, in a historical sense, it is. In 2026, are we on track? Do we think that we'll be on track to exceed that? And then an accompanying question is, what are we seeing on the start side? Because you can't talk about completions without talking about housing starts.
Yeah. So starts peaked a few years ago. The record high was 2023. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of homes under construction in this region. The overall number has recently peaked. And so our forecast is for a slight decline in completions. So we don't think we're going to hit that 30,000 number again. But our forecast is still for the second highest total number of completions ever at just over 29,000. We're still going to deliver a lot of homes in this region. It's just not quite as many as last year. On the start side, we expect They've decreased for each of the past 2 years from that record high. They're still pretty elevated, but we're actually forecasting a bit of a larger decline, in large part because that pre-sale segment of the market has been so slow the last couple of years. So there will be a decent number of rental starts, but very few or fewer ownership starts. And overall, we're forecasting down to 23,000 and change.
Right. Yeah. So the supply landscape is shifting in kind of opposing ways. Like we know that the additions to the housing stock, the true additions, will be coming in and likely in smaller numbers going forward. But of the homes that are completing, not everything is accounted for. Not everything's selling, right? So you look at the inventory in the region, completed and unsold, and we look at resale inventory. It's come off a little bit from, I think, the Q3 peak of last year, but we still have, by historical standards, a lot of available homes for buyers in the market.
And that's seasonality, right?
So there's that too.
We finished the year with the most year-end inventory since 2008 on the resale side.
Yeah. On the, let's switch over to the demand side. Let's talk about demographics. Talk about population.
Ooh, let's do it.
Let's do it. We do that a lot on this podcast.
Yes.
So, and if you listen to this podcast, you definitely know all about the federal government's immigration levels plan and their non-permanent resident target, currently pegged to the end of 2027. So They want 5% of Canada's population to be non-permanent residents, international students, temporary foreign workers. By the end of next year, that's coming off of a high of around 7.5% midway through or towards the end of 2024. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the context is prior to 2021, non-permanent residents as a share of the population were, I mean, it was a small number. Like we're talking, it was between 1 and 3% at the top side, right?
And in absolute numbers, we went from a couple of years ago, 1.2 million to more than 3 million. Yeah. And now they want to get down to 2 million people.
Right. These are big changes over short periods of time. Mm-hmm. And so again, like this is where forecasting becomes a bit of a mug's game because it's hard to anticipate those shifts, right? Like over such a short period of time, unprecedented increase and then really an unprecedented outflow of people is going to be a drag on total population. We forecast that in the outlook. Our expectation is for how many fewer people in 2026?
So total population, we expect across Metro Vancouver a 10,000 person decrease.
Excellent. Good insight.
We haven't had population decline.
Last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So last year, like we estimate because the numbers aren't.
This is still, I mean, you used our favorite overused word, but it's unprecedented. So last year we estimate that we had population decline, but this is highly unusual. We will feel it, especially across our housing markets. And that 10,000 person decline, part of that is we'll probably see 30,000 fewer non-permanent residents in this region. So all other sources will add around 20,000 and then we'll have 30,000 fewer NPR.
Well, also as part of that, the domestic migration flows are a drag too. So actually it's NPRs and net domestic flows. Mm-hmm. So people moving between Metro Vancouver and other parts of Canada, including BC. We expect that to be a negative, which is continuing a recent trend. Our immigration, like our permanent resident admissions are still robust. Like the federal government adjusted the targets a little bit last year. And they're lower materially from a couple of years ago when they were at, 500,000. We're now at like 380.
Still higher than 2019. Still
higher than every year prior to. Yeah, exactly. And that, for metro areas like Vancouver, less so for Victoria, less so for Kelowna, but certainly for Metro Vancouver, we feel that here. And so we also are having, amazingly, because not the story really nationally, we're having quite a few more kids than we are dying here. Does that make sense?
More births than deaths, although not provincially. So the rest of the province is an older, an older population than Metro Vancouver. So we were trending more deaths than births provincially.
Right. So we look at, this shifting supply landscape at the same time, the demand side of our market is shifting. This has to influence values of everything, right? Yeah. So rents and home prices. So take it away.
Yeah. So if we are adding near record levels of completions and we're subtracting people, you're probably not surprised to learn that we think rents specifically, also prices are going to come down a little bit. Construction takes so long. All of these completions that we're getting last year and this year were decisions made when we had record population growth, when we had record levels of home sales, of new home sales. And now that we're delivering all these buildings, the landscape for population has completely shifted. And so there's this, unfortunate mismatch where we're delivering homes at a time where we're actually losing people. And so our forecast is for another close to 5% decrease in new purpose-built rental rates. So that's not across all rental homes. That's sort of the leading edge for new purpose-built rental.
After coming down by over 8% last year. So it's a bit of a moderated 2025.
And that's one we said we didn't get right last year because we predicted like a 5%.
Yeah.
And
we're hard on ourselves, right? It's high standards here.
That's right. And same thing with prices. We expect benchmark prices to come down a little bit this year as well. We're not expecting a ton of home sales. There's a lot of inventory. And I think it'll take a while to sort of draw down inventory to historical levels. And so that will have somewhat downward pressure on prices as well. There's not a ton of population growth sort of fueling that side of the market. And so our supply-demand conditions on the resale side are such that I expect stagnant to somewhat small, but price declines this year.
Yeah, which I think runs counter to some other organizations that are predicting a bit of a pickup in prices. Mm-hmm. And certainly that could materialize. I think prices, the values of things, which are really like the intersection, if you're going to your like getting back to your econ 101 basics, the intersection of all these supply side variables, all these demand side variables, and it's really, really difficult to predict values over not just the long run, but I would say maybe even more so in the short run.
I mean, you did an analysis recently that you sort of pegged a level of sales on resale that were required in order to start driving prices upwards.
Yeah, good point. So yeah, I did look at that because we're forecasting, as you had said, 38,000 MLS sales for our market this year. And the question then is like, yeah, what would it take given conditions today, given the months of supply, the months of inventory that we have, mm-hmm. which is about at 8, which is the upper end of a balanced market, but pushing into buyer's market. Yeah, I asked the question, okay, well, what would it look like to have conditions tighten to the point where we were tipping into maybe a seller's market? Because that's when you start to see real upward pressure on prices. And so, you know, looking at the lay of the land inventory wise, turns out it's about 55,000 sales that will be required to materialize this mm-hmm. year against our inventory backdrop for on paper us to see upward pressure on prices. So yeah, you're right. I mean, you look at it that way, and that kind of corroborates the continued softening in values. Let's finish up on interest rates. I know we gave away our quote unquote forecast for the Bank of Canada's overnight rate, which I mean, in past years it's been a true forecast.
Yeah.
This year, I wouldn't call it that because we're just listening to the words of the governor of the Bank of Canada, Tiff Macklem, who's saying, along with the rest of the board there, you know, we've got inflation where we want it. Like, it's been between our target of 1% and 3% for the past 24 plus months. In fact, it's been right around mostly 2% as well mm-hmm. over that most of that period. And so they feel like they've wrangled it from a monetary policy perspective. It's come down. It's stable. It's where they want it to be. So, you know, it's one of these things like barring unforeseen circumstances, which could happen because you don't see them coming. That's the whole thing.
Unforeseen for a reason.
By definition, difficult to predict. The 2.25% rate, which is at the lower end of their neutral range where monetary policy is neither restrictive nor expansionary, they think they're going to keep it there all year. So we go, hey, if you're telling us that, then, you know, we're not going to push back.
So the bank always wants to signal ahead of time. They don't want any surprises. And they've said they're right where they want to be. They're at the level they need to be to maintain inflation. Inflation's in a good spot. So they've come out and said very clearly and a few times over the last couple of months, they're right where they want to be. They're not changing the rate unless something else changes. So big changes to the labor market or inflation would be a signal that they have to change their position.
Right. And let's just parlay this conversation into mortgage rates. Mm-hmm. What's the outlook there?
So we were looking at discounted, insured, five-year fixed mortgage rates, which began the year just under 4%. We think that's probably the bottom end of the range that we'll see this year. Again, they fluctuate a little bit more. Yeah. They're based on bond yields. Bond yields fluctuate quite a bit. They're a little bit volatile right now, especially. And of course, it's like an average because the banks offer different rates to different borrowers depending on their profile. But overall, 3.9 to low fours, we think we're going to see that insured, discounted, fixed 5-year fixed rate kind of hang out and move through that range for the balance of the year. So not a lot of movement, maybe a tiny bit of upward movement over the year. But overall, we think interest rates, both variable and fixed, will be pretty stable this year.
Yeah, it doesn't look like inflation or interest rates, in contrast to past years, we'll steal the headlines this year. Yeah.
This year, inflation and interest rates really aren't where we're focusing a lot of our attention. Yeah. It's other segments that we already talked about earlier in this podcast. But inflation, you don't have to get up early and refresh the StatsCan page at 5:30 for the inflation data anymore. And you don't have to refresh the Bank of Canada website at 6:45 for their announcements anymore.
Like, I won't miss it. In part, I won't miss it, but it was also a little bit of a rush there. There was a few years where I was like, what's it going to say? Especially when we'd be putting out predictions and updating them every month, right? So, and everybody's wondering, like, what is the bank going to do? We actually aren't having those conversations nearly as much with people.
And I mean, I was on a bunch of videos making big proclamations to social media.
What'd you say?
Oh, just like every Bank of Canada announcement.
Oh, like every time.
Put my stake in the ground.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think we got it right most of the time, and hope, you know, I think we're going to be right through 2026 for the most part. I mean, you could see a little bit of, you know, fiddling around the edges here, mm-hmm. where the overnight rate drops to 2%, it goes to 2.5%, but I don't think there's going to be any big direction to that. I do think, you know, when you talk about mortgage rates and bond yields and bond markets, like what's happening in those debt markets, government, like you look at, you know, the U.S., like typically when there's economic uncertainty or slowdowns, you have investors that sort of flood into, especially dollar denominated government debt, which tends to push longer term rates down. And that in turn kind of stimulates the economy. But given that so many sources of global economic uncertainty and instability are actually now emanating from the U.S. And you look at the one big beautiful budget act, which, you know, is going to bake in years of major deficits, adding significantly to the debt. And the question, yeah, increasingly there are questions around, you know, whether is that the best place to put your money? I mean, we're now seeing gold. It's coming off a little bit.
Yeah.
Gold is pushing up. Crypto, different story, maybe different podcast.
Yeah.
But
we'll leave that one for now.
All right. Well, we'll be keeping an eye out for more tariff news. But short of that, hopefully it's more steady as she goes than 2025. Thanks for bringing the data, Rye.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. And, you know, we'll hang on to this one and revisit it in a year again. And hopefully we get more than half right this time.
Well, let's revisit it in the summer. Let's see how we're doing. Okay. Before we wrap things up, we do have a listener question from Sean in Vancouver.
Hi, Ryan and Ryan. Big fans of the show. Wanted to get your opinion on the upcoming FIFA World Cup and the impact you think that will have on house prices in the Vancouver area. Do you think we will see an increase similar to what we saw in the Winter Olympics in 2010 and the World Expo prior to that as well? Love to get your thoughts on that. Bye.
I'll share my thoughts. I mean, I think that, first of all, like how many games do we have here in Vancouver? We're hosting like seven or eight games.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all of the world's eyeballs that'll be on us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we will see an influx of visitors for sure. And there will be some legacy impacts because there will be people who on TV see Vancouver for what it's going to be. Summertime too. It's going to be gorgeous.
Oh yeah. All the exterior stadium shots.
Oh yeah. And then the people who come here are going to be like, I didn't know Canada was like this. Yeah. So, you know, I think there'll be positive legacy, economic impacts. Yeah. I don't know that it's going to move the needle for housing in any kind of for home prices sales or even rents, you know, in any kind of material way. I think the most obvious impact will be in the short-term rental market.
Agreed.
For better or for worse, in the sense of, you know, we've been clamping down on short-term rentals. We don't have as many hotels as we need in the city here in Vancouver. So there's going to be major pressure on our housing and hotel stock to accommodate whatever influx we do get, but it's going to be transitory.
Yeah, I would add 2010, we had just come out of a recession and Vancouver had come out relatively unscathed and it was the beginning of a growth decade, really. Yeah, so
it was.
Part of the appreciation in prices, or most of the appreciation in prices we saw was other reasons. Interest rates came down.
We had like a decade of consistent employment growth. The unemployment rate fell to a historical low.
Strong immigration, strong interprovincial migration. We saw huge numbers of people move to BC from Alberta in the middle of the decade. Yep. And so there was a lot of other factors besides the Olympics that, you know, certainly contributed to that. One thing though about that, we got a lot of infrastructure investment that went with the Olympics, in particular the Canada Line and then the Canby Plan. So
Sea to Sky.
Yeah, Sea to Sky too. So we ended up with maybe some more housing supply in some areas that we might not otherwise have had because of the investments in infrastructure. So, you know, again, if you think about the Canby corridor, like that, a lot of that housing is a legacy of the decision for the Olympics to bring the Canada Line.
For sure. Yeah. And just to extend that, we aren't seeing those investments at all tied to FIFA, the World Cup. Yeah. Likely to be a passing impact, if any, but more on the short-term rental market.
Yeah. And the tourism side for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Sean, for the question. Thanks to everybody who tuned in to watch, to listen. We really appreciate it. As always, Rye, It's been a blast. Have a great time in Cabo.
Thank you very much. And we'll check in on our predictions in 6 months and a year and see how we've done.
Done. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie podcast. If you'd like to learn more or to subscribe to intelligence updates, go to rennie.com/intelligence.